Welcome back to Seattle's Morning News, 7:14 here on a Thursday morning. I'm Travis Mayfield in for Dave Ross, along with, you just heard him, Chris Sullivan and Colleen O'Brien. Joining us now from Washington, D.C., CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarland. Scott, we want to start with this breaking news that's just happening right now as the jury trial resumes for former President Donald Trump. It sounds like one of the jurors has been dismissed here, and the concern, it seems, has to do with her identity and perhaps the pressure she might be feeling. Can you explain what just happened?
Yeah, this is noteworthy for a few different reasons, not just because of the stakes, the trial, and any juror having concerns, but this juror who has asked to be relieved of her duties thinks that too much information about her is circulated already and people know who she is. And they've gone through great pains to ensure some juror anonymity at this trial because anybody who touches anything in Donald Trump's legal world leaves him or herself vulnerable to threats, to being targeted, to being harassed, to being doxxed. And I think the judge has expressed some concerns about what the media is reporting out from this courtroom, you know, passively, indirectly identifying jurors. They don't want to do that. You don't want to do that in any circumstance, in any criminal case. Juror anonymity is important. But they're taking extra precautions here because, it's again, in the sphere of Donald Trump, it's not just, you know, potentially unfair to the judicial system, just dangerous.
I'm also reading that apparently prosecutors may be worried about one of the other impaneled jurors, maybe truthfulness when it comes to answering during voir dire.
Yeah, they're working back to see if this potential juror was truthful about a previous criminal case or a criminal interaction with police. This is going to be the rhythm of jury selection in the first ever criminal trial of a former president. Pardon the sirens as they go by at a busy day at Capitol Hill. But I think this is why they were so bearish on the timetable needed for jury selection. They said at least a week. And you saw seven jurors get selected Tuesday and thought, maybe this will happen faster. Now there's going to be a rhythm to this where two steps forward, one step back. And it may take a while to impanel a full jury after all the second looks and third looks.
And so where does today stand? It looks like six sworn in jurors. And then I guess depending on what happens with this, the one that the prosecutors have called into question, maybe five. How many more do we have to basically impanel at this moment?
There's going to have to be obviously be 12 people on a jury, but they're going to need a number of alternates, up to a half dozen alternates, too. And you don't know who's an alternate beforehand. You pick 18 jurors. You can't have anybody on that panel knowing they're an alternate because they may not offer zone out, and you don't want that because they may be ordered to fill in for somebody and render a verdict. So you have to get 18, equally suitable, equally capable jurors. And there's also going to be some level of concern that more people have second thoughts, have concerns, have interactions that may disqualify them before the trial begins. This is going to be a bear of a process. It kind of already is.
I want to turn now to the question of the Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, the Senate rejecting the move by the House to send those articles of impeachment. You know, they basically said, Senate Democrats, that they're not going to have a trial. Where does that stand this morning? Is that basically just done now?
It's over. If you blinked, you missed it. This long-awaited, second-ever Senate impeachment proceeding against the U.S. Cabinet Secretary truly lasted less time than an average Mariners game. I mean, it was less than 3 hours. And in part because it really wasn't a trial. I mean, there wasn't, the presentment of arguments by impeachment managers. There weren't exhibits or videos. It was senators arguing with each other, which is kind of their favorite thing to do, but it was senators having an intramural fight over procedures and policies before on a party line vote. They dismissed the two articles of impeachment. And you remember what Republicans have alleged in their impeachment was that Alejandro Mayorkas breached the public's trust and willfully and systematically failed to enforce immigration law. Democrats said that is a policy dispute that you have metastasized into an impeachment proceeding. Republicans, we're knocking this thing down as quick as we can. We don't think there's going to be a political fallout for us doing so. So they did so. Knocked it out in less than 3 hours.
How are House Republicans reacting to this? They're the ones who were pushing this. They're the ones who approved it. They're the ones who sent it to the Senate. I mean, could they just do it again?
they weren't surprised. I mean, they knew this was the trajectory all along. They may have wanted a bigger show, a bigger spectacle of the Senate impeachment proceeding. But I got to tell you, the way they timed this thing, they weren't going to get a whole lot more attention than they got on it. I mean, the Trump trial's underway. The same day the Senate impeachment proceeding was set to begin, the House Republicans were unveiling their new Ukraine and Israel bill. I mean, they were stealing their own thunder. Will they do it again? There's no indication they would move to impeach the Homeland Security Secretary again. But they won't say it, but there's a clear political motivation that also goes along with this effort. They want to talk about border, immigration, and homeland security issues in this campaign. That's the battleground they want to fight on. They don't want to fight on women's reproductive rights or January 6th or democracy. They want to fight on this front, and the impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary. Again, the first time a cabinet secretary was impeached since the 1800s. It helps that effort.
And you mentioned it. I want to turn to this other topic of foreign aid. The Speaker, Mike Johnson, saying they are going to vote, it sounds like. And a lot of folks in his party don't like where he's moving things. Can you bring us up to speed on where that stands?
Well, you're watching a man thread a political needle here. The House Speaker has teed up $61 billion in aid for Ukraine, $20 billion plus for Israel, and money for the Indo-Pacific region. But he's done it in little a la carte bite-sized pieces. We vote on each one separately. He thinks that'll help him get enough votes from both parties to get each one through. Because, yeah, an awful lot, dozens and dozens of his House Republican colleagues do not want to fund Ukraine. So he thinks this is the path forward of getting it through. He says Ukraine money needs to be approved, needs to be approved now. And this is one way he's going to try to do it. But at the end of the day, he's going to have to get the sufficient votes on everything to get it all to the U.S. Senate. Not clear it's going to happen, but he's optimistic and he got a big boost of support, Travis. President Biden said he'd support the bill, too.
But Biden saying he's going to support it and he needs Democrat votes to do it. Does that mean that we could see a repeat of what we saw last fall and we see hardliner conservatives try to topple a speaker again?
Sure does. That's their biggest concern. They think Mike Johnson is cutting too many deals with the president, with Democrats. And here's the biggest one of all, to fund Ukraine. And there is already this Republican motion to oust him as speaker. Same thing that happened to Kevin McCarthy in October. There are two House Republicans who support it. You need just one to get it on the floor. The lead sponsor is Marjorie Taylor Greene, that firebrand from Georgia. She told me she doesn't have a timetable yet. But Ukraine funding is her red line. Cutting deals with Democrats is her red line. And Mike Johnson's about to cut a big deal with Democrats on Ukraine money. There's going to be some challenge to his job. The exit strategy, Travis, might be Mike Johnson getting enough of his colleagues to change the rules and require more than just one or two people to move on his job.
No spring break for you, my friend. You're just going to get busier and busier as things ramp up for the season, I guess.
I believe it.
Scott McFarland from CBS's congressional correspondent from Washington, D.C. this morning. Scott, thank you.
Thanks, Travis.
Your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. A military veteran is inspiring others to donate blood as often as they can. The community of Norwich, New York participated in a community blood drive, and their star donor, Navy veteran Allison Monroe.
I was in the Navy for 11 years, and I've been donating regularly. As long as I'm not pregnant or on any medications or anything, I donate when I can all the time. And I have two boys in the Army now, so still donating.
Still donating. She told WBNG-TV she donates blood because she's seen what a blood shortage means in the field. What happens when you can't get blood to the people who need it when they're serving our country. Monroe says even before her military service, she began donating blood at age 18. And we frequently have blood shortages here, Travis. I know with your years in news, you know this fact as well, too.
Indeed.
Often due to vacations like spring break, nobody's around to donate, or even inclement weather. Even nice weather. It's too sunny. Who wants to be inside, right?
Everybody's looking for an excuse.
Exactly. But we need about 1,000 blood donations a day to keep the local blood supply healthy. And speaking of donations, I was just at the Edmonds Food Bank, and I thought I'd mention this since we're talking about donations. I was talking to the staff there, and one thing I don't think many people know, and something I have to be reminded of as I plant my spring garden, is that food banks will take any excess garden crops you have. Even if it's one giant zucchini,
yeah,
they will find a home for it. Drop it off. It could be a small bag of potatoes. It could be a few green beans. All of those things will go to use because you know what runs out first at food banks?
Fresh produce. Yeah, fresh produce.
Fresh produce. It's something that people desperately need. And instead of turning it into compost or making 1,000 loaves of zucchini bread,
yeah,
you can donate that. So there's going to be a more formal campaign about this. But while we're on the subject of donations, I thought if you're still planting your spring garden, plant a few extra crops for your local food bank.
Plant a few extra crops.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Colleen, thank you.
Yeah.
Walking into the studio right now, G. Scott from the G and Ursula Show, 9 to noon here on Cairo News Radio. How far can we push you on this topic?
You know what?
Let's push.
Let's push, because the people that listen to this segment and listen to this time in the morning, they're used to it, right? They turn it on because they know this is the time in the morning that you better have your coffee.
I actually had my dentist tell me that when you come on the radio, he's like, no, time to wake up. So You're right. You're everyone's morning cup of coffee.
You know,
second shot.
I don't know if I'll always be at 7:45. It could be 8:45 at some point. Anyway, there we go.
Yeah, so here's the question. Everett City Council making a unanimous decision yesterday to allow individual coffee shops to dictate what baristas can wear at work. And that means the bikini barista stands can still have bikini clad baristas. What do you think?
Wait, I mean, they got to put more clothes on, right?
The other way?
They're going to put less clothes on?
Yeah, it's going from tank top and shorts now to back to the way it used to be.
No, because the way it used to be, they could wear pasties and G-strings and stuff. So now they at least have to cover their...
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So they have
more, but less than it was before.
Yes.
Okay. Let me just get right to it, y'all. Put some clothes on.
Mm.
Yes. I think that... It is strange. I'm going to make a sweeping statement here, and I apologize. Lois, if your husband Claude goes to them, I apologize. You know what I mean? I don't want to be upset. Harold, if you're always going, I think it is strange for you to go get coffee in the morning at a bikini barista. Mm. Because what you're saying is, first of all, there's a competition. There's all these different stands that are out there right there. And then you're like, hey, I go to this place right here because I really like the coffee. But I choose not to go to this other place because they really put the foam better at the top. I think it's strange that people go to these stands. I really do.
A little sneak peek with their morning
Joe? I'd understand it more if you would go to a strip club than a coffee barista stand. Now, so some of you might be listening to me like, gee, what do you know? You know what? I guess what? I'll break some news here and I'll share. Here's what I know. My second ex-wife used to do this for a living.
Really?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, okay. So I do have an idea about what happens and what goes on in the competition that happens at stands, right? Huh. And I'm telling you right now, it's a different world. I'm telling you.
Why did she do it? Why did she choose to?
I think it was an opportunity to make more money. Okay. It was an opportunity because people will come in and really will pay $40, $50 for a cup of coffee.
Really?
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, the coffee costs $5, but you go ahead and give that tip.
I'm sorry. Wait, say that again.
Come on. Yeah. Say me making them big old
tips. In the tip jar.
Drop some 20s.
Wait, what now?
For an example, look, let's just say it like this. Now, I'm being serious for a second.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, David, it's so good to see you. You look really nice in your sweater. What do you got going on today, David? Oh, you know, I'm doing this. Every time you come through my stand, I look so forward to seeing you. You look so good. That what I just said to you, you might not ever hear that again until tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You might go your whole life not hearing somebody talk to you like that, not give you words of affirmation, not tell you you're doing outstanding, not tell you how great that you are. So sometimes it's not even about seeing the person naked or in something. It's about someone that is saying something nice to you. Now, even with clothes on, sometimes you have your favorite bartender, you have your favorite barista, right?
Sure.
Even with the clothes on, you have those favorite, and you have those things said where you might go to them. Well, in the coffee barista stand world, it gets a little different because, you know, there's... Anyway, I don't want to get to that. I just believe that I think that they should be wearing clothes. I think I'd much rather see a strip club than a coffee barista stand.
Why are men so lonely?
Women lonely too. Y'all just hide it better.
Who's patronizing
Hold on.
You just brought up the point that men like to hear, how you doing? How you, and that's fine. Like, you, everybody deserves a pleasant conversation, words of affirmation, a feeling of connection with another human being.
Yeah.
These patrons like to also see flesh while they get their words of affirmation. Why? These bikini barista stands exist for a reason. Men patron them.
Yeah.
Why are they so lonely?
I think men, for some reason, we get excited about the little things and the easiest thing real fast, whereas women get lonely too, but you can't just be naked for women and just make them happy.
There actually was a male stand in Spokane when I was reporting there. It lasted like a month.
You see what I'm saying? It doesn't work that way.
It's a deeper question to think about.
It is. But I think all of us are lonely, like men and women, right?
I think all of us are more lonely.
I think
men lack personal, close relationships and friendships.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
You may not.
No, you're making a sweeping statement there.
I think
men and women are equally.
Of studies.
I think that we show it in different ways, mm-hmm. right? I think we're all lonely. I think society collectively we're lonely, but I think men we show it in different ways. And since to stay on this topic, we men
women?
Will really go and get the coffee and be like, "No, man, I'm trying to justify it, Sully. That coffee really tastes good."
So instead of going to therapy and dealing with loneliness, you just go objectify women.
You said
objectify women. No, I'm just going to get coffee.
Okay.
Wait, I'm not going to get coffee.
All right.
Come down right now.
Explain your coffee addiction. Sorry. Now I know where you got it.
Hey,
if you're going to bring the fire, I'm going to throw some propane on it. Right?
I just want to let you guys know, this is a trust tree. You guys made me feel vulnerable. I told you some things I've never told anybody. So let me get going now. See ya.
We love you. We love you.
To your point, G, Thunder from Down Under does exist.
University of Washington football player Tylan Rogers is scheduled to face a judge today. He is charged with the rape of two students last fall. Cairo News Radio Sam Campbell is live outside the King County Courthouse. Sam, can you bring us up to speed on what today's hearing involves?
Yeah, Travis, I'm outside the King County courtroom, actually, right now. It's where this Huskies running back will show up for his arraignment. That's scheduled to be in about half an hour. This is where he'll tell the court how he pleads to the second and third degree rape charges he's facing. We know his lawyer has previously stated that Rogers is innocent and that he will, quote, fight every inch of these false claims, end quote. Those claims the lawyer's referencing are two cases police referred over to prosecutors. They allegedly happened last fall during the football season. Investigators say Rogers matched with two women on the dating app Tinder. One of the victims reportedly told him ahead of time that she would not be having sex with him. The victims say that he came over to their apartments before becoming forceful. Now, I'll leave out the grisly details here, but the court documents describe blatant assaults that he allegedly committed. At least one of the women went to a hospital for a rape test kit afterward. That was back in the fall, but one of these incidents, it appears, wasn't reported until February, and Rogers wasn't arrested until earlier this month near Husky Stadium. In the meantime, we know he was suspended from traveling with the team for the December 1st Pac-12 championship, but he was on the football field, playing during the Huskies playoff games after that. Court documents show detectives looked through messages in the UW athletics department and one from apparently Rogers' father. They say the messages asked what was going on with Rogers, but that those messages were always followed up by phone calls, so no text transcripts there. University now says he's suspended indefinitely from participating with the team. So there's lingering questions about how much the university knew about these allegations and when. Those questions unlikely to be addressed at the hearing today, as again, this is a formal proceeding for Rogers to enter his plea, and we'll be getting that here in about half an hour. I'll be here when Rogers and his attorney walk into the courtroom.
Cairo News Radio's Sam Campbell live in downtown Seattle for us this morning. Sam, thank you very much.
A Boeing whistleblower claims the company is involved in a criminal cover-up That was just some of the explosive testimony before a U.S. Senate subcommittee that's investigating Boeing. Cairo News Radio's Heather Bosch is covering this and joins us live with what else the whistleblower said.
Yeah, Colleen, Boeing has been under intense scrutiny since a door plug blew out of a 737 MAX 9 shortly after takeoff from Portland. The door plug had been removed and reinstalled at the Boeing Renton plant. Federal safety investigators say four bolts that hold the panel in place were missing. Former Boeing engineer Ed Pearson told U.S. senators.
Boeing has said there are no records documenting the removal of the Alaska Airlines door. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This is a criminal cover-up. Records do, in fact, exist. I know this because I've personally passed them to the FBI.
The Alaska Airlines flight was able to safely land after the door plug blew out, but Pearson blames the incident on the same safety problems that led to two deadly MAX 8 crashes 5 years ago.
The manufacturing conditions that led to the two 737 MAX disasters also led to the Alaskan accident, blowout accident. And these conditions continue.
Pearson was not the only whistleblower to testify. Sam Salapour testified that he's a Boeing quality engineer who's worked on the 787 and 777.
They are putting out defective airplanes.
He says he's seen workers forcing parts of the aircraft together in an attempt to close gaps.
I literally saw people jumping on the pieces of the airplane to get them to align.
Now, like Pearson, he testified he was not silent about concerns.
I want to make clear that I have raised these issues over 3 years. I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up.
In a statement, Boeing touted the safety record of the 787 and 777, the MAX record again, not so stellar. In 2021, Boeing agreed to pay billions to settle criminal charges that it defrauded the government to earn original certification of the MAX. The New York Times reporting that deal could be in jeopardy because of the door plug, Colleen and Travis.
And who exactly are these whistleblowers blaming for these quality problems?
They're blaming management. They say, look, they're under so much pressure to just crank out aircraft that's where the quality is slipping, and they blame federal regulators who are not keeping tabs on Boeing to make sure that quality is high and that the standards are where they should be.
And there's been such an onslaught of criticism to Boeing and issues with Boeing planes, but what's been lost in this is what exactly Boeing's doing to fix it.
Yeah, remember the FAA gave Boeing 90 days, February 28th, 90 days to come up with some kind of ironclad plan to explain how they are improving things. They've also gotten rid of some people at the top. The head of the Renton plant was shown the door. Mm-hmm. Dave Calhoun, CEO, is going to step down at the end of the year. So there is some moving and shaking, but I think Sully could attest to this too. Until you get back to people who literally are the nuts and bolts people running things, there's concern that these quality issues will continue.
Yeah, you also lost the CEO of commercial aviation as well. He resigned immediately. And from what I'm hearing from our insiders, Boeing is probably not likely to meet that 90-day deadline. Mm. I'm not exactly sure what that means. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Heather. And thank you, Sully.
A Seattle teacher has been put on administrative leave while the district investigates comments that apparently he made regarding the Hamas attack in Israel. Cairo News Radio's Kate Stone is live in the studio now. Kate, let's start with what these comments actually were.
Yeah, these comments were actually in response to an advocacy group, a conservative-leaning advocacy group called Accuracy in Media. They interviewed Ian Golosh. He teaches social studies at Chief Sealth International High School that's in West Seattle. And according to the clip that they provided, he gave his opinions on the October 7th attack that killed 1,200 Israelis.
Was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
The rape of women at a music festival was justified.
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
So that's Ian Golosh giving the responses to those. So highly controversial comments. Now, he was actually already getting criticism for Facebook posts that questioned accounts of the October 7th attack, much like what you just heard in the clip. The district said it can't comment on the personnel matters while the review's underway, and it didn't say how long the investigation would take. But Golosh actually, he had initially agreed to talk to the Seattle Times about this, but then reversed that, said he would not be talking to the media. But he did send a text message after the Seattle Times published their report on it, and he said he doesn't support the killing or terrorizing of anyone. And he said if any atrocities happened on October 7th, including rape, mutilations, or killing of civilians, committed by Hamas fighters or Gazans or Israeli citizens or defense forces are deplorable and worthy of condemnation. And he says he struggled to navigate the what he calls the information landscape about what happened October 7th and hopes to understand clearly what did and did not happen. But again, no real timeline on how long he might be out of the classroom while this investigation continues. The district simply said, you know, we will provide an update when we have an update.
All right. Thank you, Kate. I'm just picking up on the word if there, if those atrocities happened and there's video of them happening.
There is. So, yeah, there is actually the United Nations has actually confirmed there's evidence and reasonable grounds to believe that sexual violence did occur on October 7th.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.